Help me, Geek History Lesson. You're my only hope. Because your Geek History Lesson on Leia Organa is now in session. Hello and welcome to Geek History Lesson. I'm Ashley Victoria Robinson.
And I'm Jason Cinnamon Buns for Hair Inman. Welcome to your Mind University, because this is Geek History Lesson. If you've never heard this podcast before, this is a podcast where we take one character from pop culture and we tell you everything you need to know about them in a little bit less than an hour, sometimes more than an hour. Star Wars episodes tend to go long, everybody, so buckle up. This week we are talking about Leia Organa. We'll find out if she has a middle name. We don't know. Could it be Padme? It probably should be Padme, but that would give away the secret, right? Anyways, we're talking about Leia Organa because Star Wars Obi-Wan Kenobi just wrapped up over there on the Disney Plus. And if you have somehow not been around the internet up until this point, then I won't say the massive spoiler, but this is
Well, I will, so.
Okay. If you don't want to know spoilers from Obi-Wan Kenobi,
come back to this when you're finished watching the pilot.
Come back in about 30 seconds and then don't listen to the rest of this episode.
Well, you will have to skip the whole episode if you don't Kenobi spoilers.
Okay, so you'll have to, so come back, go watch Obi-Wan Kenobi. Okay. Are you back? Okay, cool, great. Leia Organa just appeared on Star Wars Obi-Wan Kenobi as a little 10-year-old. And I decided to give her a sound effect.
I mean, they'll probably make an action figure of her, so.
They're guaranteed. So that's why we're talking about Leia Organa, to kind of celebrate that Star Wars series, correct, Ashley?
Yeah.
All right, cool. Was this episode suggested by any of our listeners?
It sure wasn't.
I didn't know. I meant, you know, maybe.
It was not.
All right. So are we ready to kick off into the podcast?
Yes. And before we start, I do want to give a special shout out to Meredith Harris for being the TA for this episode. I said, hey, you want to do an incredibly difficult
want to grab some research, some Star Wars research
for me? And she said yes. And there was a really hilarious note at the top of the notes that said, I don't know how to make this less than 100 pages, strap in.
100 pages?
Which is fair. Well, because she probably did what you and I usually do, pasted in a bunch of information into the doc to reference to. When I did, I think I mentioned this when I taught the lesson, when I did History of the Sith, all of my reference work was 99 pages.
Wow.
That I had to cut down to an hour-long episode.
A lot of listeners probably don't know this, but Geek History Lesson, a lot of ways, is just like teaching any kind of lesson, is you have to pick what do you think is the most impactful or the most important. And that's different for every person.
Yep.
But you can't just say everything. And that's why we always say when people are like, you forgot this and you forgot. It's because you can't. We're not just repeat everything you know about. That would be a podcast called Repeat Everything We Read About This Lesson.
Yeah.
Lesson. Podcast.
Yep.
Geek is the title, right?
Sure.
Good enough. But yes, thank you to helping out with your TA's name again.
Meredith.
Meredith, yes. Thank you so much. Let's get into the 10-cent origin.
What's that, Jason?
That is where Ashley is going to tell you the Cliff Notes version of what you need to know about Leia Organa in case you ever go to a badass cocktail party on Alderaan where your cousin makes fun of you because you're adopted.
Sure.
That happened.
That did happen. Leia Organa is a Star Wars character who was created by George Lucas, and she debuted in Star Wars Episode IV, A New Hope in 1977, which was also written and directed by George Lucas. She is a Force-sensitive character, although notably not a Jedi, and a political and military leader of the Rebel Alliance as well as the Resistance. She is the twin sister of Luke Skywalker and is portrayed by Carrie Fisher and Vivian Lyra Blair in live action in the Star Wars movies and then in Kenobi, respectively. Carrie Fisher's daughter, Billie Lord, also doubled her for that Star Wars movie that I can't remember the name of.
The Rise of Skywalker?
No.
Or, no, Rogue One.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And so she's been played by three actors in live action, but most importantly, Carrie Fisher. And that's your 10-cent origin of Leia Organa.
Late, great, and also accomplished screenwriter and
script doctor,
an amazing screenwriter, Carrie Fisher.
Yeah.
So there you go. All right, let's get into the meet cute. That's where Ashley and I are going to tell you where we first meeted and cuted said characters. Ashley, where'd you first meet Leia Organa.
It's funny because mine is very similar to Meredith's Meet Cute as well. So okay. I'm going to read hers to you.
Fair.
Because if you TA, then you get to weigh in a little bit. And then I'm going to let you know how similar mine was.
Sure.
So Meredith wrote, watching A New Hope in 1997 or 1998, my dad started showing me the movies when I was about 3 or 4. And I will tell you to this day that he regrets it because 25 years later, I'm still such a Star Wars nerd. Luke is my favorite, but Leia is a very close second. I idolized her as a child. And then the older I got, the more I went on to idolize Carrie Fisher.
Ah.
And that's a very similar story to me. Like, Luke is still my favorite. My dad showed me Star Wars in like the late 90s. When the new versions came out.
The special editions.
Yeah, right before the prequels were about to launch. And then, yeah, you get... I feel like there was a direct pipeline between loving Leia as a little girl and playing Leia to like being like, nah, I want to be Carrie Fisher as a grown up person and tell people to leave me alone. Especially if you read some of her writing. So we basically share a meet cute. So I thought we would roll it in there together. So how about you, Jason?
Of course, it was when I saw the first Star Wars. And I saw it, as I've said many times in Star Wars history, like when I talked about Obi-Wan Kenobi, the first time I saw Star Wars was, it was like one of the times like ABC would like make it the Monday or Sunday night movie. So
that's
what happens if you're like an early 90s kid. That's mm-hmm. that's how you saw Star Wars.
Because
I believe it took a while for the Star Wars to come out on VHS. And I remember the VHS tapes that we had were the pre-special editions. Like they put them like out one last time. And
this
is the last time they will ever be out there. And the VHS tapes were, they were black and they had like, it was like half of Darth Vader's face, half of Yoda's face, and half of the Stormtrooper's face, Return of the Jedi, which was an odd choice. But those were like...
They said, we will not be putting Mark Hamill's face on the side of this box.
Well, for the special editions, they did brand new Drew Struzan posters.
Yeah, they did. Yeah.
But I have a connection to Leia, and that connection is... an action figure spotlight.
Okay.
When, for the special editions, they brought back Star Wars into toy stores, and they did the big, beefy versions, the Star Wars Power of Force.
I had all of those.
The first line had a red background and the little pictures, and they were the 3 3/4 action figures, and they made Luke super muscly and Han Solo super muscly and Darth Vader look like he could bench press a car. They had a very stylized Princess Leia in her white outfit with the cinnamon buns, and for that line... it was the most valuable action figure to sell because she was short box, because she was the girl character, of course.
Now that I had that, I think it fully wound up in the trash.
Yeah, I could not find her anywhere. And I looked for her, could never find her.
Wow.
So my connection, my meet cute to Leia Organa is that I could never find her action
figure. They never find the action figure.
So there you go.
Nice.
Lots of Lukes, lots of Stormtroopers, no Leia.
No Leias. Leia.
Vader was also hard to find. Weird.
That makes sense, though. He's like
he's
one
popular.
Of the most popular characters. Yeah.
All right, so let's get into the main history of Leia, but we're not going to do that quite right.
That's right. If you want some more Star Wars content from us, I do want to let you know, a couple weeks ago on the Geek History Lesson blog, we wrote about going to our first Star Wars celebration.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to hear more Star Wars podcasts from us this week on the Geek History Lesson Extra, we're going to be talking about Leia Organa's cultural impact, which I think is going to probably be one of our more fun, more lively Geek History Lesson Extras, which you can find at patreon.com/Jawin. And while you're over there, we also have a ton of other podcasts that you can listen to. We have a Discord that you can join. We have the Marvel Club video review series that's going on right now. We just started the Thor movies.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to be deep into Thor. So roll on over at patreon.com/Jawin, J-A-W-I-I-N. We're going to be all Leia all the time this week.
I think the Thor Dark World video should be up by the time this podcast hits.
Sweet.
So that's going to be a very interesting
Jason
discussion.
Jason is mad about it. So
I am mad about the Dark World, but I'm not about lovely little Leia Organa.
That's
What's her middle name?
She doesn't have one.
Damn it. What do we think her middle name would be? Anakin?
It should be Padme.
Yeah, it should be Padme. Right?
Should be Brea, probably, but I don't know if they named her or not.
No. Padme names her, remember?
Nope.
She does.
I don't remember.
She goes, Luke, Leia. And then they take them to the robot.
Oh, yeah.
And the
robot
says, cool, cool. But then the robot goes, you know what? You are by yourself, so your names will be two. Trying to make a Solo joke there. I don't know if you got that.
I didn't.
Remember in the Solo movie? He goes up to the gate and he's like, I don't have a last name. The gate guard's like, you're by yourself. So that means that you are Solo, or another synonym that also means one. That's your last name.
Yeah.
Anyways. Let's continue. Leia Organa.
Leia Organa. I'm going to tell you that my thesis from having worked on this episode is that Leia has bad taste in men because her dad was evil. Because she has garbage taste in men.
So the midichlorians.
Her biological dad. Bail Organa is an angel.
Anakin Skywalker. her midichlorians from Anakin Skywalker.
Gave her a bad picker.
She has a bad picker.
She's a bad picker. Okay, she married the most abusive man of the galaxy.
I am intrigued to see if this theory carries out.
Yes. So she was born in 19 BBY. Jason, what does BBY mean?
That means before the Battle of Yavin, which is the destruction of the first Death Star in Star Wars A New Hope. So that is kind of the only... We know how many years happen, Empire Strikes Back happens, and Return of the Jedi happens, and the prequels. So that's what Star Wars uses as their timeline.
So if you're ever wondering how old Leia is at the Battle of Yavin, she's 19.
Yeah.
So 19 BBY. She is her mother was the Republican Senator Padme Amidala. Jason, do you know Padme's last name?
It's not Amidala?
It's not. Amidala is the name that she takes on when she becomes queen, and then she adopts it as her middle name.
I don't know it.
It's Naberi, Naberrie.
That's something established in the books, right? Because I don't think they ever say it in the movies.
I have no idea.
Well, it's kind of like...
I did not rewatch the prequels for this episode. Well, I apologize.
It's kind of like...
I do know this from the Padme books.
Well, Leia is not in the prequel, so that's fine, except for like the last scene.
Yeah.
It's kind of like I know the extra materials also make Palpatine's first name Sheev. And it's never said in any of the movies that his first name is Sheev.
But her last name is Naberi.
Okay.
Who died, as we all know, shortly after delivering Luke and Leia when she, quote, lost her will to live, end quote, mm-hmm. which like, is Padme a bad mom?
Remember that robot again? Cuckoo, cuckoo.
Yeah.
With a spoon for hands.
But also like, you just gave birth, like, look after your children. It's kind of like the fantasy version of this is dying of a broken heart, you know what I mean? And you're like, yeah, I guess. Rest in peace,
Star Wars is a fairy tale.
Yes, that's very true. Her father was Jedi Knight Anakin Skywalker, who had fallen to the dark side and been reborn as Darth Vader shortly before her birth. And Meredith writes, rest in peace somewhere, I guess. I do love him, though. She was adopted by Senator Bail Organa and his wife, Brea, becoming Princess Leia Organa, part of the royal family of Alderaan. Her adoption was common knowledge, and it was assumed that she was a child who had been left orphaned by the Clone Wars. This, I think, is such an interesting detail. I love that everyone knows
that she's adopted,
and it's not a big deal because she obviously has great parents.
Yeah, because Luke grows up, again, thinking that Uncle Owen is like blood related. He's sort of, you know, but like he thinks that Owen is the brother of his dad.
Yeah, who was killed by Darth Vader.
Well,
that's like the myth, I believe.
Until Ben Kenobi shows up, it's never quite clear what happened to his dad.
So during her childhood, Bail would stress both the importance of appreciating the effort of Alderaan's workers as well as her duties as eventual queen. And it was considered her life with the Organas to be that of privilege, but she acknowledged that she would give up freedom, dignity, and privacy in order to fulfill her duty as princess and queen. So she had a pretty nice, pretty soft childhood. She once complained to one of her many aunts that being a princess seemed to be only about silently doing your duty and refused to do nothing more than superficial princess stuff, only to find an acceptable husband. So usually, you know, young Leia had the same arguments about being a princess that like Princess Jasmine does, you know, kind of everybody has in the Gilded Cage.
Sure.
She often ran away or hid from her parents or her caretakers. In one notable instance, she took off from her nanny and roamed around the palace's royal gardens before finding Brea reading in front of a statue of Padme. So she kind of got a moment with both of her moms.
Why was there a statue of Padme on Alderaan?
You
may not have the reason.
Books.
Just story reasons?
Yeah. Because why not?
Look, whoever wrote that Star Wars book, that's reaching a little bit. Reaching a little bit.
Brea then explained Padme's history to a mesmerized Leia, noting that she was elected at the age of 14 to serve as Queen of Naboo and would do whatever it took to protect her people, and that she was a capable fighter, although most of her important battles were in the Senate. So Brea and Bail are really like imbuing her with the idea of like, be of service, be helpful. And it's really important to bring this up because I think this drives a lot of who Leia becomes when she really like dedicates herself to the Republic and the Resistance, aka the like Rebellion 2.0, I guess.
Rebellion 1.0, but yes, I understand.
Yeah.
It's funny that a lot of this is like her parents being like, you're gonna be a senator. I don't want to filibuster, daddy. You're going.
Well, you can also become a senator when you're quite young, yes. Right? Like Padme was supposed to have been the youngest, but like it makes sense that Leia would be on that same track.
You were gonna learn about the trade sanctions of-
It's just the last thing you do, Missy.
Yeah, you get in there and you study the Constitution.
Brea tells Leia that Padme had been a beacon of hope and that her spark still remains despite her passing. And she explains that Padme's spark of hope remains inside Leia, a spark that could one day reignite hope in the galaxy.
Ooh, could be called a new hope, one
so
could say.
So mom really laid it on thick there.
Yeah, mom read the movie poster, I think.
Mom knew what was up. And no, another notable time of her running away is in the Kenobi TV show. That's a little too recent to cover, but that's kind of how you first meet Leia. So you meet her kind of like running away, mm-hmm. and it leads directly into the events of that episode. So we're not gonna dive too deep in it. I'm not gonna spoil the events of the episode. I'm trying not to spoil the events of the series, but that's a theme that they took from the books and carried into the Kenobi television
show. She meets Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Spoilers. And it ruins the entire timeline of the first three movies.
Not really, but okay.
Grand Moff Wilhuff Tarkin, who Leia had been warned to stay away from by her father, because Bail knows what's up, visited Alderaan when she was 13, where she eavesdrops on a conversation between him and Bail. And hearing them talk, Leia realized that Tarkin is nothing more than a murderer and a slaver.
Dun, dun, dun.
So she knew from an early age that he was evil, which if you go by this book continuity, this is a lot from the Claudia Gray Princess Leia book, which is excellent in my opinion. It kind of colors the way you'll watch the original trilogy because she's kind of aware of Grand Moff Tarkin before she meets him in the movies. And mm-hmm. and obviously they have a lot of interactions, particularly at the beginning of the first movie. Mm-hmm. By the age of 14, Leia becomes a junior legislator. So the same age as her mom, she is out there, she is doing the politics, and she is affecting policy. As a teenager, she learned how to shoot a blaster pistol, and at 16 was allowed to receive basic self-defense training from a personal instructor. Do you think Leia enjoyed fighting?
Yes.
She did.
Well, she's like, look, if she's anything like Anakin, if she's the daughter of Anakin, then yeah, she enjoys the fighting.
Also, if you think about the fact that when Han and Luke have their rescue efforts towards her, like she just like rips a blaster out mm-hmm. of their hands and is like, I'm fine. Yeah. Okay. Thank you for opening the door. Mm-hmm. Basically, she found that she enjoyed the training, not just for making her physically stronger, but for providing an outlet to release tension from things like etiquette lessons. She's not a fan of which fork to use, really.
Space fork?
Space forks, Alderaanian forks. She was also taught how to ride and was good enough to become an Alderaanian junior champion in steeplechase, which is a fictional horse sport.
Is that like their dewback steeple?
Someone is screaming at their phone because they actually know what it was. It is only mentioned in this book.
I don't care.
I don't care either.
If it doesn't appear in a movie,
space,
I don't care.
Space polo, we'll say.
It's space horse.
Space horse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I look for the person that knows. I'm happy that you know, but I'm sorry. We're not going to look it up.
No.
Move on.
Her 16th birthday also marked her day of demand. Now, this is a really...
What's that?
This is like such a cool thing, I think, in Alderaanian culture.
Day of demand.
Day of demand. It's the day where she would claim her right to the throne. So,
okay,
Alderaan is a dynastic monarchy. So you inherit titles from your family, or you can inherit titles if your parents don't have, if your like aunts and uncles don't have children, you could become their heir, stuff like that. Like the way a traditional European monarchy works.
Like the United Kingdom right now.
Yes.
Okay.
However,
okay.
It is also a meritocracy because
If
you don't pass the challenges on your day of demand, you don't get to become crowned.
Okay, so you if you're in this family, you're going to be king or queen, but only if you pass like the trials?
Yes. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, I think it's cool.
Oh, okay. That makes you earn it, I guess.
Yes. So her parents presented her with challenges that were meant to test her body, her heart, and her mind.
Wait, so the parents get to come up with the challenges here?
Well, it's a ceremonial thing, right? So she does it along with a bunch of other young folk.
Okay.
Who maybe want to be prince and princess.
Oh, so they could hop ahead of you if they do better at the javelin throw.
Yeah,
or
you can use like the day of demand challenges to like move yourself forward in society and stuff like that.
Okay.
So in the book, she like trains with this group of people to hit these certain tasks. So to test her body, she has to climb a mountain called the Appenza Peak. And when she's training, there's like a young man who she has a little romance with.
Oh.
He falls. She catches him with the force and like pushes him back against the wall. But like they don't really know what happens. It's a good bit.
It's like classic Superman there.
Yes, exactly. She has to represent Alderaan in the apprentice legislature for junior senators.
Daddy, I don't want to filibuster. You're going to filibuster, young lady.
Yeah, like she has to deliver a speech and she has to like successfully debate certain topics. Tarkin is kind of a big part of her training there. He's sort of her mentor.
Interesting.
And she has to take on charity missions to planets in need. That's her heart challenge. And it's interesting because when she's doing her training for the Day of Demand, she reflects on her mother has a artificial heart. And they talk about how they discovered that she needed that when she was training for her Day of Demand. So shortly following the ceremony, it'll shock you to know that Leia succeeded at all of these things.
Well, she's princess.
Yeah, Leia. Yeah, exactly. So shortly following the ceremony, she takes on her first mission. She travels to the planet Wobani, has basically collapsed due to interferences by the Empire, as always happens in Star Wars. Here, Leia decided to take as many refugees back to Alderaan as she could, despite being told that she was not allowed to do so. So here we're seeing her leading a rescue mission for the first time, as we archetypically see her do in the coming trilogies. To train for her climb of Appenza Peak, she joins the Chandrillion Pathfinding Corps, where her classmates are fellow junior senators, including, her future boyfriend, Keir, who's like the boy that I said who like fell and she pushed him back against the wall. As well as... Amelin Holdo. I'm sorry. Sometimes the Star Wars spelling gets me.
These are all fake gibberish space names. So they're fine.
Who we saw portrayed by Laura Dern in Episode 8.
Yes, and it's said in a couple of the books. Well, the way she acts towards Leia in that movie in The Last Jedi, like, yeah, you get the entire that they have like a history.
Yeah, she's great. Holdo's
kind of like Mon Mothma.
Like
Mon Mothma to me, like met Leia several times.
Absolutely, because she's friends with Bea.
Yeah,
Brea and Bail rather, who would become her lifelong friend. So she meets Holdo during this training because she's with this Pathfinder Corps. During this time, she discovers that her parents are involved in the rebellion.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. Like 6 months before the events of A New Hope.
So before this, Leia was like, go Empire! Smash the universe beneath your heel.
Well, it's interesting because before this, she definitely has a sense that they're not happy with the Empire, but Bail is very much like, We fight in the Senate. We take proper channels. We're respectful. So the revelation that they've been doing this sneaky, underhanded rebellion stuff while raising her and preaching that you do things the right way is quite something. And she also learned that they've been simultaneously operating a rebel base on Crait.
So I'm going to throw something out here.
Go
for it. I'm just going to say, Disney, if you'd like to hire me at any time, I'm ready to pitch the Jojo Rabbit Leia Organa movie, where Leia is very pro the Empire, and she sees daydream visions of Darth Vader, not knowing that Darth Vader, her idol and loving friend, is secretly her father.
Her biological father.
Yes, and then, you know, so many interactions with Grand Moff Tarkin shows her that that's the wrong way.
There you go.
Her
parents forbid her from talking about what she's learned or to have any involvement in rebellion efforts because they don't want her to be killed.
Yeah, basically. Exactly.
And they don't want to bring her any closer to Darth Vader for obvious reasons. But Leia continued to do humanitarian work. She goes to Onome, maybe, to deliver safety supplies to local miners who are striking. She goes to Chalhutta to distribute vaccines to the sick population. She goes to Chasmeen with food and seeds and farming equipment to help restart the economy after the planet was punished for not meeting imperial quotas. She also collects evidence that the Empire had committed crimes against the Chasmeen people and brings them back to her father. And then she accompanies Bail to Coruscant as his senatorial aide. And she has another run-in there with Grand Moff Tarkin. He brags about security forces. He notes that the Empire was trying to attain peace. And she recently learned that her parents have been building a rebel fleet in the Pokrus system. And Tarkin tells her that they are going to be sort of clamping down efforts on the rebellion there. Leia realizes that he's subtly telling her that the Empire had discovered rebels in that system. So she and Haldo just, you know, casually go to the system and broadcast a message to the rebels so that they can evacuate and destroy any evidence that they were ever there. And then her boyfriend, Keir, the guy she pushed back against the wall, dies toward the end of the book during an explosion. Mm. So everyone Leia loves dies.
Yeah, obviously it was a gambit, right? Like if his Moff Tarkin was just like trying to draw
yes,
the rebels out.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly.
And they walked right into his trap.
They did. Well, she's 16.
Yes, yes.
After Keir's burial, Leia keeps a lock of his hair in her keepsake chest, which I think is kind of sweet.
So, and we have cloning in this universe, so he can always come back.
Yes. Yes. That's true. That's true. Oh, boy. I guess I know what Leia season one is going to be about. Leia. The rise of Keir. They're going to wait till that little girl turns 16 and just launch this
as
new
played
series.
By Raul Coley.
I mean,
they need to put him in Star Wars somewhere. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. So up to this point, mom and dad were like, Leia, you can't be in the rebellion. But then they blow up a bunch of things and they're like, you know what? Girl, maybe you should be in the rebellion. So after her boyfriend dies, they're like, I guess you've suffered loss now. So you can work in the rebellion. Sure. And she begins working with her parents kind of from this time forward to forward. It's not that long. They get exploded really soon. She shows up in the second season of Star Wars Rebels.
I was going to say, I knew we probably had to get pretty close to this appearance.
Yes. Leading a mission to get Kanan, Jarrus, and Ezra Bridger three much-needed ships. Sometime after this, she also aids Sabine Wren, providing her with Imperial data tapes containing the location of several Imperial bases.
Action figure spotlight. Ashley, this is about your action figure.
Yes, I have this Leia action figure. Intern Brago ripped her head off.
That is correct.
The Ahsoka I have from the same line.
Podcast intern Brago Cat, who is currently in the studio.
The studio.
He's a snooze in a way. So that's for him, it's the snoodio.
Yeah.
But yes, he did not like this Leia action figure for some reason.
He didn't eat it. He just ripped the heads off a bunch of them that I had.
I think he doesn't like Leia. I think Brego, intern cat Brego, is pro-Empire.
I don't think that's true.
I think he's very pro-Empire.
Okay.
He likes the felt capes of the Empire.
You think those capes are felt?
I mean, Darth Vader's cape is very thick in the original trilogy. It is very heavy.
I don't think felt's not heavy.
It's heavy when you have a 7-foot man like David Prowse wearing it.
Feld is not heavy. Her father eventually leaves the Imperial Senate so that he can focus on his work within the rebellion. Who do you think takes his place?
Mon Mothma?
Princess Leia.
Oh, sorry. Yes, correct. Sorry.
And she becomes the youngest senator ever elected, outstripping her biological mother, Padme.
Her mama.
Yeah. In the days leading up to the election, aiming to address the Empire and speak truthfully in true Leia fashion, a.k.a. with no concern about being polite, she meets Emperor Palpatine and is instead left speechless by the evil she feels emanated from him. So her force sensitivity is kicking in.
And how much he smells, because, like, I mean, the guy, we know he doesn't wash that robe that often.
I mean, he's basically a corpse. He might actually smell.
Yeah, he's a burnt corpse walking her out.
She was like, no, Matt Smith, no.
Oh, wow. That was a Star Wars casting rumor. Deep joke right there. Go Google that one if you care.
Yes. And after being elected, she learns that unfortunately no other senators share her desire for real change. The Senate, she discovers, has been nothing more than a formality used to validate Palpatine's every wish when no one was brave enough to speak out against him. And that's definitely a fictional thing that never happens in the real world.
Basically.
Though the other senators ignore the Empire's action, Leia throws herself into aiding those who need across the galaxy. As we see, despite this, the mass media, because Coruscant and the Senate apparently is like very media covered in the Star Wars universe. Apparently there's like magazines and Holo This and Chrono What's where they're just always reporting on what they're up to. The media reduces her simply to a princess and it ignores her endless humanitarian work. I think this was Claudia Gray kind of commenting maybe on how she was treated as well over the course of her career as a Star Wars character, because Leia definitely gets more credit as the decades go by. She's not just the damsel in distress. During the Galactic Civil War, Leia volunteers to transport the blueprint plans for the Death Star. So what does that mean, Jason?
It was Rogue One, the movie, and Star Wars, A New Hope. I don't know. What's the nature of your question?
It means we've basically butt up against the first ever Star Wars movie.
I was like, I don't know what you're asking me here.
No, you did. You answered exactly right.
It means that she's got to hide some blueprints in an R2 unit.
That's right. And she is ordered by her father, who actually goes unnamed in A New Hope.
I think he's unnamed in the entire original trilogy.
He is not named until the prequels.
Yeah.
Yes, that is true.
Yeah.
Who is she ordered to contact?
Okay. Obi-Wan Kenobi.
That's right. General.
General Obi-Wan
Kenobi. Kenobi.
All right. Can we talk a little bit about Kenobi right here?
Sure, yes.
Okay. So we mentioned it before that basically the Kenobi series, without going further details, is basically about a time when young Leia Organa meets Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Yeah, meets middle-aged Obi-Wan Kenobi. Yep.
Now, in Star Wars A New Hope, which takes place, I believe, 9 years later.
Yeah.
She says...
No, it should only be 6 because she's 16 in A New Hope.
Oh, you said she was 19 in A New Hope.
No, earlier. She's 19 at the Battle of Yavin.
The Battle of Yavin isn't A New Hope, actually.
Oh, sorry. Then, yeah, I guess she's 19. I thought she was supposed to be 16.
Yes.
Sorry.
You're thinking confusing with the Battle of Endor.
That's right. Thank you.
No, the Star Wars timeline works off the first Star Wars.
Oh, it doesn't work
The movie
all.
That was really called.
It doesn't work at all.
But so in the original movie, made first, obviously, she says General Kenobi in the transmission. But then later on in the movie, when Luke lets her out of the jail cell, she goes, Ben Kenobi.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, a lot of people have been freaking out because they've been like, wait a minute, this doesn't work if he's met her before. And I'm nixing the argument that he never left Tatooine for 20 years. Let's say he did. Let's say he did. I have always, in my headcanon for Star Wars, have always said that the reason why she calls General Kenobi is that I think at some point during her time with the Rebellion, Bail Organa said, hey, if you ever get into trouble in this system,
mm-hmm.
call General Kenobi.
Mm-hmm.
If things go haywire, call General Kenobi. And to me, that fits in with Kenobi. Like, and it kind of even bolsters that she's like, oh, I met this guy once. He literally saved my life. So that's why I'm going to call on him. Ashley, what exists for your headcanon? Let's say Kenobi doesn't exist in your headcanon, that's fine. Do you buy my explanation that Bell was like, hey, if you ever get in trouble, call this weird wizard?
I definitely do. Mm-hmm. I definitely do, but I don't buy any of the events of Kenobi.
That's fine. That's totally fine. And a lot of other fans don't either.
I'm not trying to knock the show or anyone who likes it.
Exactly.
I very much am like, Obi-Wan Kenobi was a monk on Tatooine and watched mm-hmm. Luke. That was his job mm-hmm. and never left.
Got
I'm
it.
Not interested in stories where mm-hmm. he leaves. I do understand. I understand why they made the show mm-hmm. and I understand why they made the show with Leia.
But
and I actually applaud them for caring.
But it is interesting because there is this like Intel Kenobi. You can imply that you're like, there's a little bit of backstory here. There's something here. Like, why would she call this guy?
And I absolutely believe that Bail and Kenobi could have been in contact at any time. That they would have had a way. I don't care if it was Morse code, but they would have had some means of communication as the caretakers of the children.
Mm-hmm.
It absolutely scans for
me. I think they definitely had a couple of phone calls over those 20 years, you know?
Hey, you want to like hop on Zoom real quick and
of
show
course.
Me the baby?
Yes. Oh, look, Leia's grown quite well there. What sports is, what balls and weird things have you been giving to her?
What, balls?
Yes, Bail Organa, on our weird space Zoom call, have you been giving little Leia like bouncy balls or squeezy balls?
Oh, no, I gave her...
What toys
Do you know what Mickey
playing?
Mouse is? I gave her a droid that looks like Mickey Mouse.
Mickey Mouse.
A not so subtle
no,
bit of
I don't understand
integrated marketing.
Mickey Mouse.
Yeah. I gave her a Kyber crystal.
Oh.
Instead of a soother.
It's time to begin her training. Did you know this?
Oh, she will not be training.
What?
She will not be training.
She must be trained.
She will not be trained. See, that's my headcanon, is that because there's no reason except for misogyny that Leia was not a proper Jedi in the original trilogy.
Well, I tried, but Bail keeps saying no on these Zoom calls.
So my headcanon is that because
I don't know why I made Obi-Wan Kenobi so nasally. I'm sorry.
I don't either. It's fine. He's so interested in watching Luke's development. Why wouldn't he watch Leia as for signs of Force sensitivity?
Because you don't know, because it might develop in one of them and not, develop on the other.
And not the other. You know, and it's a bit of a narrative coincidence, of course, to sort of the story being told. But so I really believe, because Bail's a very protective father, that he just didn't tell Obi-Wan. Mm-hmm. That he probably he'd been around enough Jedi, he probably noticed the signs and just did not tell anyone for her safety.
And if she is the daughter of Anakin Skywalker,
King of the Midichlorians,
every once in a while she would have moved a cup or slid something across the table.
Or if you think about how babies act, right? Yeah. Like how we diagnose like diseases or disorders in children. Mm-hmm. I absolutely believe that force sensitive babies would like float their toys or something like that.
No, the bigger problem with A New Hope, if we want to go like this implied backstory, is the fact that Darth Vader looks his daughter in the eyes and doesn't recognize her.
Yeah.
But that's because even George Lucas didn't know who Darth Vader was at the point of that movie.
Yeah. So,
and that's how writing works.
That's how retcons work.
I'm sorry. We can move past one BBY if we like. I know I've stuck us here for quite a while.
You're fine. So she's trying to reach out to Obi-Wan Kenobi. Her ship is attacked by Darth Vader. It jumps to light speed.
I should have recognized you, Faustense, or whatever she says.
She's so good in that scene, man.
She is.
Carrie Fisher is so good.
Carrie Fisher is really good. Good as Leia. She gets better and better and better.
Yes, she does. Think. Sorry, I lost myself in my notes. So, Jason, I said it at the beginning.
Okay.
What is Leia's message to Obi-Wan Kenobi?
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
Do you want the full one?
Sure.
Many years ago, General Kenobi, you served my father in the Clone Wars. Now comes the need where I need to see you again or something like that.
Oh my God, how did you remember that? I would not have remembered that at all.
There's more. Inside this R2 unit is the plans for a new weapon. Please see that they're taken safely to Alderaan, something like that. My father will know what to do with them.
Yes.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
Also, Wedge Antilles is sort of part of this effort as well, as sort of like a retcon.
That's like, a paraphrase version. I've just heard it so many times. Wow. It's iconic. It's like
you said it, and it like when you said you served my father during the Clone, it like slammed back into my brain. It's her doing that,
because it's one of the most iconic speeches in cinema.
So then the movies happen.
Yeah,
basically. So from this point forward, I'm going to try to tell you about this stuff. And Meredith did such a good job laying this out. That happens in between the movies,
which is great, because
and we're only going to allude to the movies as much as we need to, because that's the thing most people have seen. And most people have engaged with. Not as many people have engaged with the books and the comics and the
secondary
stuff.
And if you haven't, go watch them.
Yes.
If you've not seen the original trilogy of Star Wars movies, I don't care what your age is.
Yeah.
You are missing out on such a huge, just Magna Carta stone of film.
Yeah.
You can
Rosetta
see,
Stone is what you meant.
excuse me. Yes, the Magna Carta is a treaty. Yeah. I apologize. I was getting a little mixed. My metaphors were getting weird. You will understand so much. There is, like we talked about BBY before the Battle of Yavin, after the Battle of Yavin. Mm-hmm. There is before Star Wars and after Star Wars.
For sure.
Yeah.
I want to ask you, because you were a young man.
Yes.
A young straight man watching Star Wars.
Okay.
Was Princess Leia like a seminal crush for you?
No, actually, no.
No, why not?
I mean, Leia is a good looking gal.
Yeah.
And even in the outfit that they put her in the third movie, which is kind of ridiculous, but
the green dress and the braids.
Look, they knew what they were doing with the marketing. But no, not really. No, not really.
Interesting.
I never really had a crush on Leia. She was just like one of the crew, you know? So yeah, I just never saw her that way.
Interesting.
Yeah. I don't really remember a lot of my early like boyhood movie crushes, really, to be honest with you.
Okay.
Yeah. Sorry.
That's fine. So Alderaan explodes.
Her home planet with, we can assume, Bail and...
So in the secondary, it's canonized.
Oh, it's canonized.
So
okay.
In their last moment... Brea, because they don't know what's happened to their daughter.
Nobody would.
She's captured in space. Mm-hmm. She apparently senses that Leia is alive. If you want to attune that to the Force, to Leia, like pushing a connection to her mom, or if you want to attune that to like feminine intuition or mother's intuition. And Brea and Bail die holding hands as their world is destroyed.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's kind of sad.
The big death of Star Wars.
Yes.
Alderaan.
Yeah. I mean, it's when you actually think about the implication of imploding an entire planet, it's
a
devastating.
Planet just disappearing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, it's horrifying.
It's the first time it'd ever been done before. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Also, when she finally does get to the much discussed Yavin, we get to see her really taking up after her parents and stepping into the role as a rebel leader. Mm-hmm. So, while on Yavin 4, it gets evacuated. Leia is dismissed when she expresses a desire to take action and scout for a new rebel base and is told that she will not be leaving Yavin without a full military escort due to the 100 million credit bounty placed on her by the Empire just hours earlier. So this moment also really cements how valuable an asset she is, both as a leader, but in her sort of galactic standing.
She's like, guys, I really think we need to go to a snow planet. I just really think snow planets are the thing.
Literally anything else. Dejected, she focuses on the evacuation effort when she meets rebel pilot Yvonne Verilane. Yes, we're going with that.
Yvonne Verilane.
E-V-A-N-N. Yeah. So I'm going with Yvonne instead of Evan.
Evan Verilane.
Evan Verilane.
Eva Bababoom.
Who tells her that there are rumors that the Empire is hunting down any surviving Alderaanians, Leia being the most famous of the Alderaanians.
Why would they care?
Because we needed a story engine.
I understand. I understand the reason for the series, but like, why would the Empire care? I understand. Okay, I'll just keep going.
Yeah, so Leia records.
Comics.
Leia records a decoy hologram of herself.
Ooh.
Apologizing for disobeying orders before taking off with Verilane and R2-D2, because you can't have a Star Wars story without R2-D2.
Up yours, Darth Vader.
Basically, to try and save her surviving people.
Okay.
And her rescue efforts are hampered when her family friend, June, J-U-U-N,
June.
When he shows up and spares Leia in exchange for the ship. So she can't.
For what ship?
For her ship, the ship she's on. She does eventually successfully rescue a number of Alderaanians, but turns down returning to her princess duties. They kind of want her to like take up and be the figurehead again and maybe become the queen. In favor of continuing her aid to the rebellion, where she and R2-D2 reunite with Luke and Han and Chewie and C-3PO. Luke and Leia then head out on a mission to Tibrin, where they pose as diplomats from House Barrenko from Naboo. I really like the choice of them pretending to be from Naboo.
Naboo.
Yeah.
Because they are Nabooian?
Nabooies?
They are Nabooies. They are secretly Nabooies.
Yes. Yeah. They are biologically Nabooies.
Nabooies.
Like, here's a
Nabooians.
Note. Here's two notes. One, it's way easier to say Star Trek planets because many more of them have been spoken.
And they're based on, like, a lot of times Roman words.
The lion's share of the Star Wars planets, especially the ones we're talking about in this episode, I've never heard spoken.
Jabim. Yeah, they're jabababababooboo.
Also,
yeah.
There's too many vowels in Star Wars planets, and they're hard to pronounce. Thank you for this digression. Yes, exactly. While discussing the Ishi Tib and the Rebel Alliance working together, it's like another sort of offshoot. Okay. Ishi Tib.
Zaka Baka Waka.
Yeah, exactly. a squadron of stormtroopers attack, knocking out Luke because he's the powerful Jedi.
Got it.
And taking him captive. Leia has to sneak onto the ship where he's being held and rescues him before he goes on to be tortured. I like this because it's an inversion of how they first met, right? We get to see Leia rescuing her brother
now.
Cute. Alongside the usual Star Wars gang, Leia leads an infiltration to destroy an Imperial weapons factory, which is very cool. And then when Han later asks her about several parts needed to repair the Millennium Falcon, she tells him he needed to actually work and offers him a mission as her co-pilot while she scouts for new Alliance base locations. She doesn't want to help him if he's not willing to help himself or if he's not willing to put in efforts towards the rebellion, which I think really, I don't think this was planned because I don't think the brand synergy is this good, but I think it really echoes the lessons that we heard earlier in her childhood about her parents telling her to live a life of service and to make yourself as useful as possible. She's trying to project that onto Han. And he's like, yeah, okay, I guess.
Yeah.
They have a run-in with a couple TIE fighters. They land on an unnamed planet where they heard that one of Han's smuggling deals where he offers her some wine to celebrate their survival. It's really weird. Leia refuses. She thinks that Han is hitting on her because he is. He insists that he would, quote, rather seduce a Gundark, end quote, when his estranged wife, Sana Staros, shows up conveniently. Because this is...
I remember that issue.
This is one of his smuggling dens. So this is like a base that he sets up that he's obviously visited a lot. So
this is also one
Sana's of... just like hanging out waiting for him to show his stupid face again.
We'd mentioned this in the Kenobi episode that Star Wars, when J.J. Abrams took over, they kind of expelled all the old novels and comic books out
Until
of continuity.
They didn't.
And... well, they're picking pieces of them. So those are called Legends now. And now the current Star Wars comics are supposedly all in the same continuity, even though the live action is going to ignore what they want when they want.
Yeah.
And this is one of many.
Rended the internet in half.
Well, Han Solo's old lovers.
Yeah.
Han Solo's old lovers are... they are that is a trope that is seen multiple times, and the old legends did it all the time. So it's interesting that like when Disney had the chance to be like start fresh, and they were like, you know what story we should do? How about that old trope where Han Solo has an old wife? They brought it back, you know, and you're like, yeah, you guys could have just used the old novel.
Yeah,
sorry, but this is a trope where it's like there. It's always like, oh, here's the old ex girlfriend of Han Solo, and Leia's like, and there's just much more interesting stories to tell with Leia.
Yes. So Sana recognizes the bounty on Leia's head. She contacts the Empires, who try to arrest her, but they only get Han. Sana and Leia then team up to rescue Han because he's so freaking great. And Luke, who had also been taken captive. And upon being rescued by Leia, Sana says that she was not actually Han's wife. JK, JK, JK.
Aha!
And the two of them had reached an understanding. I hate this.
Mm-hmm.
And this is no dig against anybody who worked on the story. I don't think it's poorly written or poorly conceived or anything like that. I just think that Leia is too capable and has too much self-respect to be treated this poorly by Han Solo and then still have a child with him. I think it reflects incredibly poorly on her, and I don't like it at all.
The idea of this, you can see in it the trappings of Disney.
Yeah.
You can see that Disney, again, I don't blame the writer. No. You can tell that somebody in Lucasfilm or somebody in Disney was like, okay, we're gonna say this character is the wife because that's gonna shock the reader and that's gonna make news.
Yeah.
But she's not actually gonna be the wife because we need Princess Leia to be pure and be the first wife of Han Solo.
Mm-hmm,
and there's a lot of skeeviness, I think is the best word in that, where you're just like, just guys, if you have to like categorize it that way, you shouldn't do it.
Yeah, It reflects poorly on everyone. And Han Solo is already a deeply unlikable, problematic misogynist. I don't think he needed this to help him along.
Yeah.
There's another encounter with Darth Vader, and Leia is able to capture Dr. Aphra, you know, the bisexual archaeologist who worked with Darth Vader.
The Darth Vader sidekick that Disney, Comics added.
We love her. Yeah. And took her prisoner. So now the rules have flipped with Darth Vader, and Leia has the prisoner that Darth Vader likes.
Okay.
Leia ultimately frees Aphra a few weeks later when a formal Rebel spy attacks the Rebel prison that she was being taken to, and Leia needs her help in retaking it. I just wanted to mention that because I didn't know before doing research for this that Leia and Dr. Aphra actually crossed paths, and I really like Dr. Aphra. I would love to see her brought to live action. There's a ton of small missions between the movies where Leia and our usual Star Wars friends infiltrate a planet. Things go wrong. They manage to get the situation handled. There's like a ton of them. I'm not going to recap them for you all here, but here are some quick hits, some like fun things that they do. They hijacked a Star Destroyer. They got knocked out on Skorelli Lay and then escaped eventually.
That place.
Yep, you know it. You love it. They crash land on an unnamed ocean planet with Luke, and they survive on an island for a while.
Ooh,
they do Gilligan's Space Island.
Oh.
Yeah. Then Han Solo, being the peak male that he is, tries to dip out after having a run-in with some of Jabba the Hutt's bounty hunter. He gets mad because he claims that Leia's not being honest with her feelings for him. Which is like super, super gross of him. I don't like it. But then they find out that Luke was like actually captured again. So they have to like set aside talking about their feelings to go and save him. I have to say, as like an ardent lover of Luke Skywalker, the amount of times that Luke just like accidentally gets captured as the story engine is shocking.
And doesn't get put in a box and sent to Darth Vader immediately.
This is all canon. He's the most useless Jedi during this time. Like this is not the Luke episode.
So the interesting thing, and we have to point this out, is that all these stories you're talking about are taking place in the 3-year period.
Yes.
In canon, in story time between A New Hope and Empire Strikes Back.
Yep.
And during this time, a lot of the writers and a lot of the common tropes are that at this point, Leia doesn't know if she loves Luke or Han. So there's the love triangle.
Yeah.
And also, Luke literally has no Jedi training.
No.
Luke's only Jedi training is the ball trick thing that Obi-Wan did on the Millennium Falcon.
Which is fair, but we also know, and we know from where he ends up, that he's a pretty intuitive learner, that he has really good capability. Like, just
because he's secretly the chosen one.
Yes, but
can't
just
wait for those YouTube
just
comments.
The fact that he's like constantly kidnapped is like,
I understand.
Cool, why is this the guy that you're like following around?
Because also at this point, Darth Vader is fervently searching for Luke.
Yes.
And the fact that like Luke is captured
constantly
25 times in these 3 years, like the fact that he didn't just die in this time period is the problem with tie-in stories, is because you have to create all these other adventures that equal to the movie, but it's impossible.
Then I want to talk a little bit about like one more thing on the Han and Leia relationship thing.
Okay,
so
you're very pro it, we can tell.
Yes. Leia tells Han no twice.
Are we jumping to Empire Strikes Back?
We're in Empire Strikes Back.
Okay.
The hyperdrive is damaged.
They're in the asteroid field.
They can't escape.
They go into the asteroid field.
Yep. They're like waiting in the asteroid field. Leia helps Han repair the ship. And he kisses her without her consent.
Mm-hmm. That's true. That is 100% true.
And it's really icky.
Mm-hmm.
And it really bothers me that it is held up as one of the greatest romances. Let's forget him having been married before. Let's forget him being a deadbeat dad. Let's forget him walking out on Leia and then her supposed to be excited to see him 30 years later.
Mm-hmm.
This is such a bad move. And this is a romantic archetype that people are judging their contemporary relationships by. And I think that's incredibly damaging. And I just want to draw attention to how gross it is.
I agree. I think you cannot talk about Leia anymore in a modern context without looking at how much of a stereotype.
She's a period. She's a creation of her period.
Han is such a stereotype of that late 70s, early 80s, Steve McQueen machismo.
Mm-hmm.
And that is not how a human being should act.
Yeah.
It's just not in terms of consent and in terms of how he negs her.
Yeah.
For 30 years.
Yeah.
And she loves every bit of it. Now, those people are very real. But also, I guess it's one of these points where this is sort of a point where you have to put two things on top of this. One is that we're in a completely different time.
Yeah.
And if you were to do basically that Han Solo type character in a movie now, the internet would explode in half.
And well, because if you tell somebody no and they do the act anyway, that's assault.
Exactly, exactly, exactly. Which I will say, aren't we glad that we live in that world? That would be the response now.
Yeah.
So because Star Wars is not the only movie guilty of this.
No.
Many 90s.
But it's also one of the most famous IPs in the world.
Exactly.
So that's
exactly
the one that gets the discussion.
And I think you're valid to bring this up, and I think you're 100% right to bring this
up,
Ashley. The second point I was gonna say about this is that Star Wars is a fairy tale.
Yeah.
And it should be viewed as such. And sometimes it's like, you have to like kind of put Star Wars as frosting.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing below the frosting.
And the frosting is
very sweet. And I do love Star Wars and I love the frosting. But there's a certain point where like, if we dig too deep, there ain't going to be nothing but the plate.
Yeah.
You know? And so like, you kind of have to look at it. You kind of have to. Your points are very valid.
Mm-hmm.
I 100% agree with you, Ashley. And I think people that do, if someone was to say to me, Han Solo is a great husband and father, I'd be like, Is he? I don't know. You think you might be taking the wrong lesson from those movies.
Yeah.
But it is also a fairy tale. So you have to kind of like, it's a weird tight wire act that we have to sort of like view these movies. And these movies are 40 years old too. And times and people change.
They are. So yada, 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 Cloud City, yada, 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 Lando, yada, 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 Frozen and Corbinite.
The Empire Strikes Back happens and Han Solo gets frozen as an ice cube.
In between the two movies, there's like a billion other tiny little small missions and encounters where they run into enemies, Luke gets kidnapped, and they manage to escape. Mm-hmm. 3 years later, Leia...
1 year later. Are we at Return of the Jedi?
We're going to Return of the Jedi.
1 year later.
1 year later, Leia and the others are able to rescue Han from Jabba's palace. Mm-hmm. Leia's disguised as another bounty hunter, bringing in Chewbacca for reward money. No.
Yes. She comes in as the bounty.
That's right.
I think her name is it Bosch, or is she's in a Bosch type suit?
Bosk?
No, Bosk is the other Lizard. Bounty hunter. I believe it's a Bosch type suit, and it's like, she talks like this.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Oh, I had that extra figure.
Because she uses the thermal detonator, because C-3PO goes, the thermal detonator!
She frees Han from Corbinite is Star Trek.
Carbonite,
thank you, Jesus.
I got them mixed up.
What
as well.
Is the what kind of alien is Beta Ray Bill? A Corobite?
Corbomite is the fake element that Captain Kirk lies about.
I have it written out before me and I can't even read it.
Carbonite is what Han's. They're both fake. It doesn't matter.
Freeze Han from the Carbonite, only to discover that she's been captured.
Yes.
Then the slave Leia moment happens.
Yep.
And I want to state that Carrie Fisher ardently hated the slave Leia outfit. She thought it was a joke when it was first shown to her. She didn't like how revealing it was. She didn't like how uncomfortable it was. She had to sit really rigid and upright in it. And this is her quote about this costume and this character moment.
Okay, great.
And I quote, "What redeems it is I get to kill him, which was so enjoyable. I sawed his neck off with that chain that I killed him with. I really relished that because I hated wearing that outfit and sitting there rigid and straight. I couldn't wait to kill him." And then when the slave Leia action figure was nuked off the shelves by parents groups, she said, and people said, what are we supposed to tell our children about it? Carrie Fisher said, tell him I've killed him after that.
Okay.
A recurring theme throughout the OG trilogy is Leia putting her mission first, as well as being stubborn and not listening to orders or other people's advice. We see it a lot when she's a child and a teen and her as an adult. Her competence, confidence, and the way she does things and what she says and being the best no matter what is what I love the most about her. Toward the end of Return of the Jedi, Han tells her that he understands that Leia loves Luke and he would not interfere with their relationship. And that's when Leia finally reveals that she does love Luke, but not romantically because George Lucas finally decided that they were siblings.
Yeah, and she finds out because Luke just tells her.
Yeah, and she kind of acts like she knew all along. They try to do a little bit of retconning there.
They do, and they also do this bit of retconning where, again, it was Return of the Jedi. It was 1983. George Lucas had no idea he was ever going to make another Star Wars movie again. Where Leia said the line, "I felt like I could sense my mother. I had a sense of her, my real mother."
Which is like,
you didn't, because she dies within seconds of your birth.
Yeah.
So there was no connection between you and your mother. I don't know.
Yeah.
If you want to be a real continuity hound about it, you can be bothered about it, but it doesn't make any difference.
Han and Leia kiss, and then they get married by Ewoks. Sometime after the battle...
They don't get married in Return of the Jedi.
Well, they have their... So a lot of people consider that ceremony to be their wedding.
Really?
Yes.
Really?
Yes. They're like official wedding, you know, before
what?
You go
I've
before the Justice
heard
of
this
the
before.
Peace. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So like the joke is married by Ewoks.
There was a book in the legends back in the 90s that was literally called The Courtship
Not canon.
Of Princess Leia and Han Solo.
Yeah,
and that was the book that they got married in.
Well.
So people consider Endor?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, and like the
Yub Nub is not about the Empire, it's about them?
Yes.
Is this, folks, right, is this, have I been in the wrong universe for like 30 years?
I mean, it's headcanon, so it's not.
Wow. Please write into us at GHL Podcast on Twitter. I want to know, did you also think that was their wedding? I've never thought that. Not once.
Okay.
I feel like I live in Bizarro Land.
We have
now.
So much left to get through.
No, we have to figure this out.
We have so much left to get through. We are only through the original trilogy. Sometime after the Battle of Endor, Luke begins training Leia in the ways of the Force. This is the new, at the time of this recording, canon version of how this goes.
Yes.
She constructs her own blue lightsaber, which is actually a really cool lightsaber design. They finally made a prop of it.
I think in the Legends, they made it a purple lightsaber.
Yeah, I wish it was purple, but the blue one's pretty cool,
but
too.
It's blue.
Her lightsaber combat skills become good enough to go toe-to-toe with Luke. She even bests him at certain times. She practices meditation, learning the basics of the Force.
You see that scene in Rise of Skywalker.
She can levitate and sense other sentient beings. Leia believes that visions from the Force explain how she was able to remember their mother, Padme, despite her dying right after childbirth.
That's some bend over backwards retconning, but I'll allow it.
And Luke himself notes that Leia is a quick study, able to learn and adapt quickly during her training, which I like to think is a result of how her parents raised her on Alderaan.
She's a fast learner, you mean?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because she had to like take in all this information and, mm-hmm. and serve to her highest capacity.
They both learn pretty quickly. Like, to be honest with you,
well,
both of their
if they're twins, they're both the chosen, you know, maybe together they're the complete soul.
Yeah,
like, and she operates more in the quote civilian world and he operates more in the Jedi world.
Again, when you think about Luke's Jedi training, it's pretty bunk. And Leia's would be even worse.
Bunker, yeah. While continuing to train with Luke, Leia has visions of serving the galaxy in different ways other than being a Jedi. She don't really want to be a Jedi.
Got it.
The ultimate reason she ended her training was due to a vision or a sensing of the death of her unborn son if she continued down the path of the Jedi. And I'm going to say this right now, should have continued down the path of the Jedi.
Yeah, this is, I want to say this is a Rise of Skywalker thing as well, or this is an extra, I don't buy this.
I don't either.
Except for they didn't want her to be a Jedi in The Force Awakens, and so they changed their mind.
Yep. Luke hopes that at a later time she would return to her training, but Leia emphasizes her decision by giving him her lightsaber and asking him to pass it on to a promising student in the future. Retcon, retcon, retcon. Though she ended her training, she valued the time that she spent with Luke and would continue to use what she had learned from him during her future career in the Galactic Senate of the New Republic. Then there's another big break in between all of the movies, and people get captured and people explode. And
depending on what version, Chewbacca is alive or dead.
Show up. Every second character, whoever showed up, shows up and gets an adventure in these 10 or so years.
30.
Yeah, a bunch of years.
If we're hopping from Return of the Jedi to Force Awakens, it's a 30-year gap.
It's hard. Leia aids in the liberation of Kashyyyk. Kashyyyk?
The Wookiee planet.
That's right. Insisting to Mon Mothma that the Wookiee's freedom and dignity were not open to discussion when Mon Mothma offered to negotiate with another empire about sort of freeing Kashyyyk.
It's something that I wish something Star Wars live action would actually do. After the Empire falls in Return of the Jedi, it doesn't all fall in one piece. All the legends, all the books give the idea that it actually took the rebellion several years to get to Coruscant and several years to even get the New Republic founded because the Empire...
Well, that's actually how government works.
Yes, the Empire people kind of stuck around and were like, we're still valid.
Yeah, no, I actually like that.
Just because
works and that it doesn't just all become rosy right away.
That's why I've said for years a trilogy about Rogue Squadron freeing Coruscant would be a brilliant set of movies.
When Leia was like heroically pregnant, Han got to go off and do all these cool undercover missions, but she couldn't anymore. So she started spending a lot of time alone with her baby stuck inside her body.
Okay.
So when she was waiting for him to come back, she found that she could sense her unborn son using the Force. And she likened the feeling to a pulsing, living band of light. And she knew that the baby could feel her emotions. So she tried to be really careful about what emotions she let him feel. And upon returning home, Han remarked that it was weird to stay back during the Battle of Jakku and just like be with Leia and be with his baby. Because he's like, oh no, I have to sit still and have a I couldn't possibly. I'm Han Solo. But Leia reassured him that it was worth it because they were starting a new era. So the Battle of Jakku goes in favor of the New Republic. That planet that suddenly became important was saved. Leia attended the surrender ceremony of the Empire passing control of it back. And during the signing of the ceremony, Leia goes into labor, but she only tells Han once the ceremony is over so they can rush off to the birthing chamber because she didn't want to interrupt the important political moment that was happening.
So like Theodore Roosevelt getting shot on stage and continuing his speech for the next 19 minutes.
Yeah,
they're telling me that Leia Organa was like, I can hold in this baby.
Obviously,
until this is
either her water didn't break or maybe like Naboo's people don't break water the way normal humans
do. Look, some Star Wars writer was a fan of Theodore Roosevelt. I will allow
it. I get it.
Leia is just as tough as Theodore Roosevelt. We're going to put this out there right now.
And on the day that the Empire surrenders to the New Republic, Leia gives birth to her son, Ben Solo, who would go on to be Kylo Ren. She finds Ben to be a perfectly normal human baby and perfectly normal human emotions, and that he shares her perfectly normal human force sensitivity. He gets older, however. He struggles with the dark side because, God forbid, any freaking Skywalker didn't suffer struggling with the dark side.
That's right.
In the year 15 after the Battle of Yavin,
okay,
Leia sends him to train under Luke, who is rebuilding the Jedi Order. It makes sense. She still serves as a galactic senator, but becomes disillusioned with the government, the same thing that happened to her biological mother and her adopted parents, finding that the Senate would rather bicker and act than act in any meaningful way, and decides that she will resign at the end of her current term. This is literally the same thing that happened to Bail and definitely doesn't happen in real life.
If I remember this, and I want to say, like, I heard fans talking about this, I think part of the thing that happened is they wrote this book where people find out that she's also the daughter of Vader.
They do.
Yeah, and that's like a big deal.
Yeah, so that's great that you brought that up. So when her parentage is revealed, she writes Ben, her stupid son, a letter in order to confront the revelations of his ancestry. She doesn't want him struggling with the dark side and not understanding why he's struggling. Mm-hmm. So before resigning as senator, she confronts a bunch of the sort of more evil cabal that she's been working against. And the evening that she leaves, she organizes a meeting with several other members of the Republic military and announces a formation of the new rebellion called the Resistance.
Yeah.
Because during this time, not only is the Senate once again following a way to be ineffectual, but we're getting the rise of...
The former Imperial remnants are becoming the First Order.
Yes.
Yeah.
So basically 2.0. They got like 10 years of peace.
If that.
And then everything goes bad again.
If that, yeah.
Leia officially becomes the leader. She opts to be addressed as General Leia instead of Princess Leia. And now we're officially at the new trilogy
stuff. The Force Awakens.
Yes. Following the revelations that his grandfather was Darth Vader, Ben Solo, under the influences of Snoke, the supreme leader of the First Order, becomes further obsessed with the dark side, and he's determined to carry on the legacy of Darth Vader. We're going to skip any more Kylo Ren stuff because he sucks unless I absolutely have to bring him up.
Ashley, how do you feel about Kylo Ren?
He sucks.
Got it. Okay.
The only cool thing,
if you like him, everybody, that's just fine.
Kylo Ren ever did
Save
was
catch
a blaster bolt. It's the only good thing he ever did.
And that happens in like the first 5 minutes of The Force Awakens.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm going to say this right now. He's got a good look. And I like his mask. And I hated it when they got rid of the mask.
I agree.
Because he actually looked and sounded like a Darth Vader.
Yeah, and not like a giant baby.
And that's what you need.
Yeah.
For Star Wars.
No use for Kylo Ren.
Yeah.
Leia and Han both blame themselves for Kylo Ren's turn to the dark side. They separate because Han has no spine, and Leia continues to lead the resistance while Han and Chewbacca, with his utter lack of a spine, goes back to being smugglers. Luke goes into exile, and Han and Leia suspect that he has gone back to the First Jedi Temple. The Force Awakens happens. The Last Jedi happens. I'm going to go ahead and claim it right here.
I don't know about the time gaps between those movies either, by the way. The first two happen right on top of each other.
Yes, they do.
Yeah.
So those two movies happen. The only cool thing Leia does is she like flies into the vacuum of space and doesn't die.
Yeah.
I don't have a lot of nice things to say about how they treat Leia in the new trilogy.
That's
I think it's incredibly disrespectful.
Ashley is getting very verklempt, which is fine.
It's like upsetting.
Yeah.
Because the idea of her being General Leia is good, and then they do nothing with it, and then Carrie Fisher dies halfway through, and they just don't know what to do, like, at all. Rise of Skywalker happens, Leia dies. Okay? The end.
She dies with some special effects in some, yeah. I'm gonna say it right now, some very badly written scenes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Later on, when Rey travels back to Tatooine to bury Luke and Leia's lightsabers at Luke's childhood homes, a Force ghost shows up of Luke, a Force ghost shows up of Leia. She smiles and gives her approval that Rey is a part of their family, even though she's not.
Mm-hmm.
The end. Star Wars lessons are so hard. My friends.
I am looking forward to the comments on this one. Oh boy. Hello. Hello.
There you go.
All right. So are we to recommended reading?
We are to recommended reading.
All right. Recommended reading. If you want to learn, read some of these books or some of these things that Ashley perused over while she was working on Leia and thinks are good examples of Leia and her character, go to geekhistorylesson.com/recommended reading. You can find a reading list for every single one of our episodes. And get yourself some good reading for the summer. Ashley, what's going on the list for this one?
Okie dokie. So we actually have a bunch of recommended reading. And a lot of the stuff that we went into in this lesson, and we
gave
jump
you full
over a lot of stuff, you can read in more depth if you pick up these. We have Leia, Princess of Alderaan by Claudia Gray. That is about her Day of Demand and her training. It takes place directly before the events of the original trilogy. You also get a really nice look at how her life was like as a young child and how much Bail really shaped who she becomes. There is Star Wars Princess Leia by Mark Waid and Terry Dobson. This is the comic event that takes place in the direct aftermath of Alderaan's destruction, where she's going around and rescuing all the other Alderaanians. There is Star Wars Bloodline, also written by Claudia Gray. Fun fact, this is considered to be one of the best like contemporary Star Wars novels that has come out. It takes place a few years before Episode 7. It focuses on her time in the Galactic Senate, how she decides to fund the resistance, all that stuff.
And this is where the Vader revelation comes out.
Yes, exactly. All that stuff that we were talking about leading up to the final part of this podcast. And then Meredith included this as a recommendation. I'm going to co-sign it. Any of Carrie Fisher's books.
Oh, 100%.
Definitely The Princess Diaries.
Postcards from the Edge?
Which deals directly with her time on Star Wars, but I'm going to find a full, complete collection share because she is an incredible writer. She talks very openly about her time and her experiences, good and bad, on Star Wars. And if you want to understand why Leia is so important and the thought that went into like bringing that character to
the
screen.
A lot of it is the actor.
You can't do better than checking out those memoirs.
She's a great writer. So good call, T.A. Meredith.
Yeah.
All right. I forget what's next. I'm sorry.
We're going to do honor roll time.
Oh, yeah.
Because if you want more of a discussion, come to the extra. This episode's running long.
Okay. So the honor roll is where on our Twitter at GHL Extra, Ashley will write a tweet that she's going to say on this podcast live.
That's not what the honor roll is.
Oh, sorry. I thought we were a teaching tweet.
I surely did not write one, so let's go to the honor roll.
Okay.
That's why I told you we were going to.
I apologize.
The honor roll. We haven't done a teaching tweet in like 6 weeks.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much.
Trying to pace them out.
All right.
And you're not letting me.
The honor roll is if you go to Apple Podcasts and give us a 5-star review, we're going to read whatever you write on the air as thank you for popping us into the Apple algorithm. So Ashley, who joins the honor roll this week?
We are joined this week by JP2432432243. I think I got all the numbers in. Please just use your real names and your usernames. Who says, came for Superman, stayed for the others, approximately 400 episodes. Last year, I got really into Superman out of the blue, purely because I was in a bad place and his optimistic message spoke to me.
Rad.
I was reading popular storylines, but wanted to know more, so I found y'all's Golden Age Superman episode online. I followed that to the source, and in 2021, I think I've listened to 150 plus of your old episodes.
Wow.
I drive for a living, podcast help. Wow. This podcast has truly helped me discover my inner geek. Ashley, keep bringing your keen literary analysis to the world of comics. Jason, never stop singing and making us laugh and learn.
Okay, good.
So that's an incredibly nice review.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, JP2432432243.
Well, I hope whatever road you were driving on as you were listening to this, I hope it's going well.
I hope you're well caffeinated, well rested.
Yeah, I hope you're doing safe. And, once you're done, drive right on into the teacher's lounge. They don't mind. It's big enough for a car.
What's going on in there right now?
Professor Organa is in there, and she's teaching cinnamon rolls and baking with cinnamon.
Leia doesn't know how to bake. She's a princess.
Oh, but she's got some amazing rolls on the side of her head. Just going to say. If you want to join JP...
2432432243.
Yes, go to Apple Podcasts. Leave us a 5-star review. We'll read your post on the air. It's the only way you can join the honor roll. And while you're over there, don't forget to follow and subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you really enjoyed this lesson, or if you hated this lesson, tell your friends about it. That's where we're asking about it. You know, even if you hate
it. Look, and if you want to tell us you hate it, that's fine, but like give us 5 stars.
That's damn straight.
All if you're
tell your friend about it.
If you're going to insult us,
tell your friend you really hate this podcast. I don't care. If you want to follow GHL on social media, Ashley, where can they do that?
You can do that at geekhistorylesson.com, facebook.com/geekhistorylesson, on Twitter at GHL Podcast, or on Instagram at geekhistorylesson, because they don't have character restrictions.
That's right. And you can follow Ashley on Twitter and Instagram at Ashley V. Robinson. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Jawin. That's JAWIIN. Ashley, hashtag stuck around, where we ask that they stuck through the plugs. We do another discussion. What are we talking about?
What's your favorite Princess Leia outfit or hairstyle?
Ooh, that's pretty good. I like the return. No. I like the Empire Strikes Back Cloud City look. But I also like her Hoth look. She has the best.
I do like the Hoth look.
It's the best.
Yeah.
And then, but I like the purple or the pinkish hue of her Cloud City dress. But her hair is the best in that movie because they do this interesting braided bun thing.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
And because it looks good. It makes her look good. It's very flattering to Carrie Fisher, but also it looks practical. Because the cinnamon buns just don't work.
It's funny because Carrie Fisher talked about how she didn't like the cinnamon buns because she thought her face was too round. And I've never looked at Carrie Fisher in my life and been like, your face is too round.
Yeah. She's wee in those movies. She is so tiny in that first movie.
I think she's like 5'2".
Yeah.
And also they told her to lose weight for it. And if you read The Princess Diaries, she's like, I didn't.
Yeah.
So we love to see it.
She is so thin in that first movie.
She might weigh 100 pounds or 110 pounds.
She is bones.
Also, she's wearing like flowy clothes the entire time. Yeah. Like it fully does not matter what her body looks
like. Exactly. Well, what's your answer for this? Because I know you're a big Princess Leia fan.
I really like the white gown and the space buns.
This is the classic.
I do. I love classic it so much. Look. I also like it through the power of retcon because it's the most that looks like an Amidala, like a Padme outfit, because Padme's known for her ostentatious outfits. So I kind of like it for that reason as well. But I think it's that and Hoth are tied for the best outfits.
Interesting. Easily. Well, awesome. Well, great. I hope you enjoyed this podcast from a galaxy far, far away. I am Jason Cinnamon Bun Inman.
I am Ashley Victoria Robinson. Thank you to Meredith Harris for all your hard work today.
Excellent job.
This was her first job doing a TA. Like I said, it was incredibly complicated. There are cute little notes where she's like, I don't know that much about this movie. and I'm really, really proud to bring in other collaborators on Geek History Lesson.
That's right. Thank you so much. And Professor Ashley, will you please close out this episode?
Class is now dismissed.